This is episode 48 of the Fifth Estate Podcast. Rick Wilson on Donald Trump and the firing of Jim Comey.
Hey there, folks, it's Neil Dewing, and I want to take a minute to tell you about our friends at Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. You will get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It's really a no-brainer. No longer do you have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gives you a cheap shave. Neither do you have to spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech that you don't need. I myself use Dollar Shave Club. Now, for several months out of the year, I go bearded. But when I do shave, I find Dollar Shave Club delivers a smooth, sleek, really quite attractive result. And when I use my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor with their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade glides ever so gently and gives me such a smooth shave. Plus, their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is transparent for a more precise shave, which helps prevent ingrown hairs and fights razor bumps. Now, listeners to the Fifth Estate can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. This is a $15 value for only $5. In your first month box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees and no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/fifth. That's dollarshaveclub.com/fifth.
All right, it is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. I'm Jay Caruso, your co-host, along with my other co-host, Mr. Neil Dewing. How are you, sir?
Jay, I'm doing great. Loving it.
All right. Wait, before we get started, as we always do, we tell our friends and everybody who listens to this podcast that we need you. Do we need people to review it, or do we want people to review it?
I need it, Jay.
Neil,
I need it. I need it desperately.
Neil needs it. Neil needs your affirmation, and what we mean by that is, you know, go out to iTunes, leave us a review, leave us a star rating. We really appreciate it. Tell people to subscribe. When people subscribe, we're happy, and. Honestly, the reviews help us. It keeps us kind of in the spotlight on iTunes and just kind of allows us to reach a bigger audience when you do that. So it's always nice.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is, Jay. So it's turned into a bit of a busy news week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it started off, just ho-hum, nothing really big happening. And then all of a sudden last night it was like an earthquake hit.
Yeah. And for those who are unaware, the director of the FBI, James Comey, was unceremoniously fired by President Donald Trump this week.
He was fired by Donald Trump, and I don't think anybody saw it coming. It was a very it was kind of a shock, and it was. The aftermath and everything that's going on so far since it happened has just been crazy. I mean, there's just news coming out every couple of minutes and, the accusations and denials and whatever else. And, somebody who has been kind of, part of, following Trump ever since he, kind of announced that he was going to run for president, and I don't think anybody's going to be surprised to learn he's a Trump critic. But at the same time, he's got a lot of knowledge about this kind of stuff and knows the players involved and knows the kinds of, the ins and outs of this game and everything that's going on, and figured, this is a hot topic. Let's talk about it. And, GOP strategist and Daily Beast columnist Rick Wilson is here to discuss. Rick, thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be with you guys.
All right, Rick. So let's let's get down to brass tacks here. Essentially, you know, Trump doing this, it was another thing that everybody thought that maybe had been something that just happened right out of the blue, but apparently this has been in the works for a week or so that they've been planning on this. Now of course, I think one of the things that they're trying to do is they're trying to say, oh, the deputy attorney general came in and read over some paperwork and decided that, that Comey needed to go. And Trump, who's been praising Comey for what he did with Hillary Clinton, suddenly said, yes, you're right. I think it is time for him to be fired. Why don't you give us, before we get into more details and more questions, just kind of give us your 50,000-foot view of what you think about this and what it looks like.
Well, I think what it looks like is, if not de facto obstruction of justice, de jure obstruction of justice. This is quite clearly contingent not upon the new deputy AG coming in, but rather on the fact that 3 days ago, Jim Comey put a request for more resources and more money to investigate the Russia situation. And 3 days later, he is fired. This doesn't strike me as a difficult Occam's razor assignment. Trump does not want any more examination of this. He wants to end this investigation. I don't blame him because it's sort of an existential crisis for him. But in getting rid of Comey the way he did and hoping that Democrats would embrace him over doing so, as in many things with Trump, it boggles the mind how he thinks or doesn't think about the consequences of these kind of actions. I think this is not a moment for him to celebrate, because I think he's actually given himself more exposure to problems than less.
Yeah, and so that becomes a thing. And then of course today, I don't know if you saw it, Jake Tapper on the lead, basically saying there were two reasons. That one of course was the whole Russia investigation, that Trump didn't like where it was going. And then the other one was this kind of, I don't know, there's two different reports. Jake Tapper said it was, that Comey wouldn't kind of express any kind of loyalty to Trump, whereas somebody else said it was characterized it more as, whether or not Comey should be a team player. Either way, he's not supposed to be loyal or a team player. He's supposed to be kind of independent.
Correct. The attorney general of this country is not supposed to be somebody who is beholden to any individual president, but rather... the DOJ has a specific and particular niche in our political system, and the FBI director in particular is supposed to be an honest broker and go where the evidence leads, without the traditional, fear or favor. And obviously Trump wanted Comey to say, no problem, I'll learn Russian, it's cool, and stop investigating. So, look, Republicans have had experience with Comey in the past where he's been stubborn, as did, President Bush. But, they also understand that this guy is a fairly straight shooter. And, he has shanked both sides over the years, and both sides have had reason to be unhappy with him. But, firing an FBI director for a lack of cause is quite a remarkable moment in our history.
It is, Rick. And, I think even many Trump defenders would have to concede that the timing on this is just abysmal.
No, bro, he's playing 87-dimensional quantum chess.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Heard that. Man, I didn't even know that was a thing.
You win.
But the stench here, it's just, yeah. it stinks. It's either incompetence or it's something else.
I certainly think that there's plenty of incompetence to go around in Trump world. However, in this case, I really do believe that we are in a situation where they are quite worried about where we're going. Think about this now. He's lawyered up with a civilian law firm, not White House counsel, to defend on the business records request from Senator Graham. He is wired very, very tightly on any comment about this. It sets him off. He's immediately launches into these tweet storms. I think Donald Trump is feeling a little bit of pressure and a little bit of tension that he doesn't want to admit to, but it's certainly changing his behavior. And I certainly think it has a lot to do with how far along the FBI got in this investigation. And it also has to do with the fact that, you know, while most members of Congress don't want a mean tweet from Donald Trump, they also are starting to realize, like their compatriots did many, many decades ago in 1974, that blind defense of a president when you are perceived as defending corruption ends up being a suboptimal outcome politically.
Yes, absolutely.
In 1974, the Republicans lost 49 House seats and 8 Senate seats. And while there were some other factors, the major push was that voters thought they were defending a corrupt president.
Right, and that was something I pointed out today and something I wrote because I went back to 2006. Everybody thinks that, you know, GOP lost control of Congress because of the Iraq War. That was part of it, but it was also the quote-unquote culture of corruption, Jack Abramoff and Foley scandal and all that kind of crap, you know, made it bad. And from what, you know, not to kind of steal your thunder here, but some of what I'm seeing so far early on from some Republicans is making me nervous because they look like they're ready to just kind of like take up sides with Donald Trump because Republican.
Well, they are, and an awful lot of Republicans now basically have that sort of, but he attacks the media, so I love him. You know, I've seen a lot of alleged conservative writers and bloggers and thinkers and talkers, you know, get into this endless spiral of excuses of why it's okay. And you know, I have to say, in a situation like we're in right now, where there is a potential level of criminal liability for this president and his team, that's a really big bet to make. It's a really big lift to make in thinking that nothing can go wrong.
It is, and I'll be honest, let's lay this out here. On the recommendation of an attorney general who had to recuse himself from this investigation because of his own dealings with Moscow. Trump has fired the man in charge of investigating, you know, the Russian involvement in this election and what have you. On the face of it, this is unethical.
Yes, I mean, look, as I said earlier, this is the appearance of obstruction of justice at the very minimum boundary layer. And I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to declare it that way, but I suspect that a prosecutor with a room temperature IQ could make the case here that they are attempting to suborn and subvert this investigation, and that you know, this is obstruction at the minimum. At the minimum layer, it's obstruction. So I just find this to be a remarkable moment, and it's also kind of remarkable because Republicans in Congress and specifically, and even some in the Senate, have now entered this phase where they're going to go down with this ship. They're going to let it, they're going to, you know, as they say in Macbeth, let it come down. And I think it is a dangerous political spot to be in if you go forward in the hopes that, you know, just being a Donald Trump advocate is going to save you in the future when Donald Trump may not have a lot of political capital to use to save anything, including his own ass in the immediate future.
Well, this is what I think is so insidious about it, Rick, is that, you know, people like David Frum, they make the argument that we have this creeping autocracy and it's coming on us, and it's going to happen, not all at once, but degree by degree. And we're going to slowly acclimate ourselves to a climate of corruption where we don't notice it. What would prick our conscience no longer will. And so that allows for greater and greater abuse. You know, when President Trump reversed course and appointed his son-in-law and daughter as advisors, getting them security clearance and all that, so after saying that they, after the campaign or whoever said that they wouldn't do that, now, that was corrupt. That was nepotism. And so that should have been alerted people, right? But you move on, more things happen. That seems less important. That seems like less bothersome. Now you get to this, which is quite troubling to a lot of people.
There's a great phrase from Daniel Patrick Moynihan, speaking about welfare back in the day, of defining deviancy down. And right now what we're doing is defining further and further down what the acceptable boundaries of political behavior are. And as I made this point on another interview today, if this had been Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, while they were under investigation by the FBI, firing an FBI director, I assure you, Rush Limbaugh would have had a stroke. Sean Hannity would be running around like a lunatic. Alex Jones would be buck naked in his studio doing a war dance. This would be a gigantic shit show, and we would be having a collective hissy fit over it. And now it's like, what else, bro? It's Trump, man. It's 87 dimensional chess. It's cool. So,
well, Hannity running around like a lunatic, Rick, I mean, what's different about that?
He would not be doing his kung fu katas appropriately.
No. Yeah.
his form would suffer.
His form would suffer, yes.
Yeah, Limbaugh today called it a troll of the Democrats by doing it. You know, like he was, like Trump was actually kind of like thinking this through. Beyond anything that's going to cover his own ass.
There was a period of time where I thought that Trump had this sort of craft about him. And honestly, I think we've all come to realize there's no there. He is he's living in the absolute immediate moment. Everything is contingent. Everything is whim and fancy and immediate belief. And the fact of the matter is Trump doesn't have a sort of like mental landscape of considered thought. It is just what he thinks at that moment about whatever shiny object is in front of his face.
And you can tell that from his, from his tweets. I think it was Tom Nichols had written something, and he kind of tweeted something about, what foreign nationals can kind of glean from Trump's tweeting, because he is so impetuous and basically just starts tweeting whenever he feels like it. And whatever comes to mind is coming out through his little stubby fingers onto Twitter. And then I don't care what a lot of people say, oh, just ignore it. But as far as I'm concerned, it does give some kind of insight into what he's thinking. When he was tweeting the other day, he was freaking out about Sandra Yates and what she was saying. You know, it was obvious that he was nervous about it.
He is nervous. And you can certainly see when there's an uptick in his anxiety level, the tone of his tweets and the brittle sort of affect that you can see coming through in them, where he's desperately trying to change the subject and use the old magic and make people suddenly think, oh, it isn't about X, it's about whatever Donald just said it was. And that just doesn't work as well in these moments where people are asking, like, is this guy actually, fully sane? And are these things he's denying over and over again, methinks he protests too much is one thing, but this is a guy with like Proverbs 28:1, the guilty man flees when no one pursues him. That's often Trump.
I mean, well, you look at the letter, his termination letter to Comey. He made sure to mention that he had been reassured three times that he was not under investigation, which to me, when I read that letter, seemed like an obvious insert. Whoever wrote the letter, drafted the letter for him, put it on his desk, he said, no, I got an edit. Put this in here, which is small, petty, and I would say...
And also, unfortunately for the president, who is not, shall we say, a brilliant legal mind, you can't exonerate yourself. Doesn't work that way. And, he was looking at that, and now he will come out and say, well, in my letter, I said I was innocent, therefore I'm innocent. It just doesn't work that's not how this works. So
yeah, you're right. That's exactly what he'll said. Or he'll use his famous phrase. Well, a lot of people are saying that.
Well, tell me.
Oh, yeah.
People say all the time. Right.
So let me. Go ahead, Rick.
it's an unusual conceit on his part that you know, he gets to redefine reality. And there is a point. Listen, if you're a hardcore Trumper or a conservative who's now dedicated himself to basically defending Trump every day, you know, you'll find a way to make even the most absurd and ludicrous assertions by this guy seem legitimate. But there's a point where the courts and prosecutors are just going to say, yeah, no, that's not how this works, and move on from there. And I do think we're going to reach that probably sooner than later in the course of this investigation, because no matter what, Jim Comey being gone or not, this is still now in the Eastern District of Virginia. It is still now, you know, there are subpoenas for various documents and various information from Trump's team, including especially Michael Flynn. And you don't get to just pretend this isn't happening. You don't get to just sort of shake your head and go, eh, no big deal.
So I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think so far that the only Republican who so far has said, okay, it's time for an independent investigation now, the Justice Department cannot be trusted to kind of handle this thing, is Justin Amash.
Correct. And as of right of tonight, Justin is the only person who has come out and firmly said, this isn't working, and this isn't how any of this works, and made a very, you know, declarative statement about the matter.
Right. And so that kind of bugs me. I mean, there's been some hedging by some, oh, I can't understand why he would do this. This is disturbing. This is unusual. This, you know, but it doesn't really mean anything. And so I guess what's going to happen is that they're going to, at some point they're going to have to find a replacement for Comey, but they obviously haven't yet. What are they going to do? Are they going to defy, you know, what the norms and kind of get somebody that they want, or are they going to, you know, the Democrats are going to scoff at, or are they going to, and then try to force Republicans to push the nomination through, or will they try to sit there and get somebody? I mean, what do you think they're going to do?
They've got a bigger problem than that. I think they may end up with a very difficult time in naming an acting AG, an FBI director, without some pretty significant improvements on the way this investigation's been handled. I think there are Republicans who are going to feel a little bit nervous, a little bit concerned about just putting in somebody who could be a rubber stamp for Trump in the FBI, because the downstream consequences to them, they'll take the burden of those downstream consequences. Trump voters don't care. They don't care. I've said this before. Literally, Al Qaeda could give him bags of bloodstained money on the White House lawn, and his supporters will go, "Well, that was his plan all along." But a lot of these Republican members are going to be in a situation where they have to say to their constituents, "Yeah, I voted for a guy who kind of turned out that he was covering up for Trump." That is not a situation they want to be in by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
So, Rick, let's turn to some of the defenses of Trump and this firing. Is it fair to say that Comey had job performance issues? Had he done a good job as FBI director? Was it within, you know, it's obviously within the president's power to terminate him. He just did it. But would that firing have been justified in a different climate?
Well, look, I mean, as you said, the president has the power to fire him for no cause at all. But in this situation, even if you want to question the way he handled the Hillary Clinton email situation, and one certainly can, I certainly have, you have to ask the question of, you know, is that firing, although allowed and permitted under law, a politically wise thing to do when you are in a situation where the White House is currently under investigation, multiple members of Trump's most senior team and advisors are under investigation? Is it a smart thing to do at this moment in time? And the answer there is obviously not. I think he's bought himself a lot of political difficulties with this. I think he's bought himself a lot of legal difficulties with this. And I keep coming back to this. It doesn't matter on a certain level if Comey is gone. This is already with the AUSA in the Eastern District of Virginia. It is already a counterintelligence investigation. There is very little they can do to kill that without going to jail. If they want to try to kill it, I welcome them to, because they will end up in orange jumpsuits.
Yeah, I mean, like they say, it's not the crime, it's the cover up, right? So we're gonna take a quick break with a word from our sponsors at Casper Mattress.
Folks, Neil Doing here to tell you about our friends at Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house, has a sleek design, and is delivered in a small how-did-they-do-that-size box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. The Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. Its supportive memory foam offers a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature throughout the night. With over 20,000 reviews and over 4.8 out of 5 stars, it is quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns to the US and Canada with a 100-night home trial. That's 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Now, a special offer for our listeners. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/fifth and using fifth as your promo code. That's www.casper.com/fifth, promo code fifth.
All right, and we're back. We're here with Rick Wilson, GOP strategist and Daily Beast columnist, talking about the James Comey firing. So let's look at kind of touch back on the defenses, you know. So I heard Tucker Carlson was one who said, you know, James Comey should have been fired a long time ago. So this is just overdue. And I've seen that excuse from several people saying this has been a long time coming. He should have been fired already. So he just waited a little longer. What's the big deal?
Well, I think certainly that if you're looking at people and the tone and the tenor of their defenses on Trump, you know, this is the usual sort of alternative facts department they want to establish. You know, when Sarah Huckabee goes out there and says, oh, we're done with this now, we're not talking about it anymore, and Kellyanne Conway says, oh, well, we made the decision Hillary Clinton would have made, and that's why it's okay. You know, when you go through all these things that these people have used as excuses, you come down to the point where they're not reasons, they are excuses. They're advising about why they did this. They are, you know, look at anything except the elephant in the room, which is Trump's involvement with Russia. And again, you're going to go back to the fact that Comey, 3 days before he was fired, asked for more resources for this investigation from the White House. They said, hang on. And then they said, you're fired. So, you know, this is not something I think that's easily excusable or easily explainable. It's just a much more difficult exercise than the Trump people anticipated. And the political consequences, as I said earlier, you know, we're going to be in a spot where they're not going to like the extent to which you know, Democrats hold the line and moderate Republicans start looking at, you know, whether or not this thing is holding up in the polling. because it's not going to hold up in the polling over time.
Yeah, that's where there's some big implications is 2018. I mean, when you looked at the map prior to Trump taking office, it was something that Republicans probably looked at and said, wow, we're going to do really well in 2018. We've got, there's some room there. But this is something, again, it just goes back to what you were talking about, going back to the Nixon era, going back to 2006, you know, where if Republican voters, conservative voters feel like, you know, that they're all lying down in the dirt just to defend Donald Trump, then the turnout's going to be depressed and it could be a disaster. Then you're stuck with President Thinskin and a Democratic Congress trying to get something done. You can just imagine how that's going to go.
Oh, believe me, I think there are plenty of people who, you know, thought that Trump was some sort of magical negotiator with these psychic powers over you know, anybody, Republican or Democrat in Congress. And, you know, the fact that he's sitting there playing games with Chuck Schumer right now, calling him crying Chuck or all this other stuff. Chuck Schumer is a guy who would wake up and eat a live baby to accomplish his political ends. He will roll Donald Trump over and crush him like a bug if he's the majority leader. We'll have a very different political climate in the Senate, and Donald Trump will not like the outcomes.
I think you're right about that, Rick, because, you know, people like Chuck Schumer know how to get things done in Washington, and they will put in the work. You saw it when the first abortive effort to repeal Obamacare, Trump gave it, what, half a week, you know, and then it was like, well, they screwed up. Sorry, I can't get it done. Even though that was the only reason he was, well, not the only reason, but that was one of the main reasons that he was elected.
Remember, the master negotiator. He knows how to manipulate people. He knows how to get things done. He's gonna be the one guy who can do these difficult things that all those cucks in Congress would never do. Blah blah blah. So,
yeah. So let's talk about the future a little bit more. I mean, let's talk about sort of the course of the Trump administration as you see it playing out. We've talked about, you know, there's worry about 2018 for Republicans. But, you know, will he do, first off, will Trump be impeached? Maybe we should ask that. Do you think that's realistic, or is that a fever dream of the left?
Right now, as of this evening, Donald Trump could walk out on the White House lawn with a live newly born infant in his hand, rip its heart out and eat it on the White House lawn, and Republicans in Congress would shrug and go, whatevs, dude, no problem. They are completely, they've abandoned their constitutional duties. They have abandoned their responsibilities. They have abandoned their moral principles. They have abandoned their political sanity in order to defend at every point Donald Trump. Now, privately, an awful lot of them that I talk to are incredibly nervous. I have an acquaintance, a friend in Congress. He is publicly a rabid pro-Trump guy. It has to do with the chemistry of his district, okay? He is publicly a rabidly pro-Trump, MAGA, red hat wearing mofo. Privately, I think he's about to have a nervous breakdown, because he believes that the president is not mentally competent. This is not a rare belief in Congress right now. There is a widespread belief that they're just going to ride the storm out and hope for the best and hope it's Mike Pence someday, and hope that they can get the tax bill passed, because that's really all most of leadership cares about is the tax bill. That is the only thing they really give a shit about. So
I had a professor in college who was
never impeached unless there's some sort of major change in leadership in the House.
So I had a professor in college who was in Congress during Watergate, and he would tell the story of how Nixon resigned, got to the point where he knew he had to resign. And it was when Republicans did realize that this was going to kill them. And they withdrew support rather than actively impeaching him. They just signaled that, yeah, this is gonna happen. Charges will be brought, whatever, whatever. It was just putting down the shield wall, essentially, you know? Do you see that at any point happening? What would it take, maybe?
I think you may see that, but as for actual impeachment, I don't see it coming. And the reason is that because of redistricting, our guys are pretty much all in safe red districts now. And there is still a gigantic degree of terror on the minds of these members of Congress who believe that the mean tweet from Trump will lead to 50 Breitbart stories about how, you know, Congressman John Smith from the 15th district of state X is a liberal Soros shill cuck rhino libtard, and then it will lead to Sean Hannity screaming about them at night and Rush Limbaugh saying we've got to get rid of so-and-so. There are a lot of them that still believe that. It is more than a little pathetic, but it is definitely the case that they believe that. And so some of them will just sort of slink away into the darkness, but most of them are going to stick with this guy until his numbers reach the teens, which is not, by the way, completely impossible. There's a theory that you go back to where the hardest Bush support was in the worst states in 06 and 08, and where we got down into the 19-20 range in a few states. Now, we get there and Trump's in a different situation, but, you know, until then, it's never going to happen. These guys have made a conscious decision to, go all in and stick with this guy until the bitter end. And it's sad.
Even if by some miracle the House were to vote for impeachment, then if assuming the Senate makeup was still the same, you know, there would still need to be 19, 20, I think, whatever Republicans who would have to cross over and vote with Democrats to convict. And then you're worried. Then again, the same political concerns come in. You know, is this going to cost me my seat if I choose to impeach this, you know, to convict this guy and have him tossed from office?
Yeah. And look, the fear of being the deciding vote to throw Donald Trump out of office, even if he has committed high crimes and misdemeanors, is something that these guys are definitely, there's not a lot of political courage in the Congress right now. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, again, like the only one who stood up and said anything about having an independent investigation is Justin Amash. And, you know, it's really disappointing. You know, especially, you know, and Rick, you saw this play out. We all did. You know, you go through the primary and the Republicans who were just sitting there saying this guy is he's a Democrat, he's this, he's crazy, you know, we can't have this. You know, this is not something that we can have. And now, you know, as so many of us have warned, you know, okay, all right, yeah, we were wrong that Trump wasn't going to win, but we are absolutely right of what a screw up this guy was going to be. I mean, it's been three months.
That's a point, because the predicate of Never Trump was partly that Hillary would beat him. That was partly the predicate. But the larger predicate was he doesn't represent conservative values. He's not a conservative in any meaningful way. He is a dangerous figure for this country. And so, you know, we end up in this sort of desperate moment where we pretend that it's okay, we'll get some benefit out of it, it'll be all right, we'll get a Supreme Court justice, we'll get a few, you know, we'll get some wins here and there, and it just, it's a big risk to take with a guy who is, again, contingent and not necessarily very mentally stable.
Yeah, I mean, we got Neil Gorsuch, and everybody keeps referring back to that, but that, I don't even think he cared about that. I don't think he cared. It was like he had a list. He said, okay, and then asked somebody, which is the best one? This guy. Okay, here we go. There.
Right.
You got your Supreme Court justice.
Let's put it this way. I would bet anything in my life that Donald Trump didn't stay up at night reading Neil Gorsuch opinions.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything. I would make any bet on that. And so, you know, we end up in a situation where conservatives now seem happy with table scraps off of Trump. Well, at least he bashes the media. Ho, ho, ho. I mean, that's it for a lot of people. And you know who I'm talking about. You know a certain group of people and a certain site that I'm talking about who if Barack Obama had showed this kind of ideological, you know, diversity or impurity of thought, it would have been constantly ridiculed. If George Bush had done this sort of thing, they would have lost their fucking minds. But now it's like, hey, it's Trump. It's cool.
Yeah, so. I guess that's the thing that bugs me the most has been this, been the rationale. And of course, this notion somehow or another that people like me, people like you, people like Neil, that we jumped on the kind of the anti, you know, Trump thing as terms of, you know, to be able to get money and glory out of it. And it's like, you know, I can't even begin to imagine how much money I left on the table by not jumping on the Trump train and riding through.
Let me give you a number. It has six digits after it. It has six zeros involved. Trust me, believe me, I every day, you know, wake up and go, well, you know, you did the right thing. And yet, what I should have done if I had just been a pure capitalist is form a Trump super PAC called Patriotic Patriots for Patriotic Patriotism for Trump and skeezed out with a zillion scummy emails about how we're going to stop crooked Hillary and made millions off of it. And some people did. And now there are a lot of people in the clickservative world who are writing all these pieces, felating Trump on the daily, praying that Robert Mercer's checkbook will magically spring open and shower them with money. So
Rick, what bothers me is that a lot of what is happening doesn't seem like it will be fully appreciated for some time. I think it's understandable to wave off some of the concerns of people like Frum, who see this, you know, looming authoritarian regime, but that's only because we're caught up in this daily grind, as you say, this immediacy, this, you know, we're in the moment. And it leads me to think, if you're thinking long term, you know, what are the prospects for our republic? You know, if you care about that kind of thing, if it's about, you know, you're invested in the American experiment, you're invested in this republican form of government. You see the examples from history when demagogues would take hold, they would chip away at the character, you know, of a nation, of a republic. And past a certain point, you can't go back. It's like an event horizon. So my question for you, Rick, is like, what, in your opinion, what are the long-term prospects for the American Republic?
Well, look, I think the Republic is still actually fairly robust. And I'm hoping that the madness of King Donald will be something that will not be an appealing political modus going forward. Now, the bet that Steve Bannon and these guys are making, their nationalist, populist, anti-globalist bet, is that they'll have enough people on board for that who will provide them with a critical mass, enough of a base level plus a little majority to win and govern for a while. Like I said, I think we're resilient, but there's a point where the disease damages the body politic in ways that it's much harder to recover from than if we'd never gotten the disease in the first place.
So final question, Rick, let me ask you about what you think. Now, again, and we've talked about this and the long-term damage that we think that Donald Trump is going to do to the Republican Party over time. I mean, not only with policies, but with this kind of corruption that seems prevalent within there. And they just don't seem to care because they think that, you know, I guess they think because if their supporters continue to hang with them, that they can just kind of ride it out and do what they want. What is your long-term view? If you look out over the next 5 years, what's the Republican Party going to look like?
If the Democrats could organize a two-car motorcade or a six-place dinner at Waffle House, they'd scare the shit out of me. But they can't. They are the most grotesquely incompetent political party in modern times. And I mean, I'm including Vermin Supreme in this. They cannot get out of their own way. They cannot stop talking about shit people hate. And they will, instead of making this campaign about Donald Trump's corruption and pre-existing conditions, they will go and rant along about gun control and a Planned Parenthood and all this other shit that no one cares about or that they've already lost the battle on. And they will end up gaining some seats, but not as many as they could. You know, if the Democratic Party were smart, they could gain 40 seats in the House, even with redistricting. But they're not smart. And you know, as Republicans, guys like me have hacked and exploited the Democrats for many, many years. I helped elect a Republican governor in Vermont 4 times. That doesn't happen because the Democrats are bad. It happens because we know how to beat them in a lot of ways, and they won't unfuck themselves from dumb positions. But you know, the truth of the matter is we are in a situation now where they have a great opportunity, and they almost certainly will blow it. And I think that is bad for the Republic. I think we need a competitive Darwinian system of political parties that scrap with each other and bring out, you know, the better competitive nature in the other party, but we're not going to get that with the current Democrats. And, you know, I see very little prospect for them understanding that their method of stunt casting for a presidential candidate, you know, is it worked great with Obama. But in the long term, it's a weak prospect. It's a weak system. You know, so if we end up with Elizabeth Warren and Riel Grijalva or whatever the hell they do in 2020, you know, they're going to lose again. And if we end up with the same stale rhetoric, they're going to lose again. I mean, they need another Bill Clinton to put us on the defense, but they're not going to get that because they've now become so insular in their progressivism that I don't think it's really possible for them to get out of their own way.
You're right, because it's like as much damage as Donald Trump could do to the Republican brand, like you said, Democrats are just so inept.
Something with nothing.
Yeah. You know,
plan every time. They don't plan. They're just bad at politics. I mean, I have a very close friend who's a Democrat. And I think the guy, I feel for the guy because he is a campaign manager type and whatnot. And he just, it's like, if he had our toolbox, holy shit, he'd crush us. But he's got their toolbox. And it's always this sort of horrifying shit show of, you know, making sure you never use the wrong pronoun and making sure you have a set of policy positions written down on your website that are poison for 99% of the voters in the country. It's just a real mess.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rick, you know, appreciate
on
you
that
coming
cheerful
on.
Note.
What? What's that?
Get on that cheerful note.
Yeah. Well, no, seriously though, we appreciate you coming on. You know, we was a little bit short notice. We do have one more before we let you go. We have one more bit of business that we have to do.
We've got a gotcha question for you, Rick, and I know you're probably no stranger to gotcha questions and the peril they represent to one's career. And this one is no different. I'm sorry to say, we're springing this on you.
Fire away.
All right. Now, this is a matter of vital cultural importance, and it is also a matter upon which Jay and I disagree quite strongly. And so we ask you to take a side. Rick Wilson, is the television show Seinfeld overrated?
Yeah.
Rick, you are my hero.
Here's the deal. Here's my opinion on Seinfeld. The shtick of Seinfeld was great as a skit, but after a while, it's always the same fucking show. And I know About Nothing is funny and everything, but yeah, it's overrated. Then again, I also am a heretic, and I believe the Beatles are overrated. So I'm just a dark person, I guess.
Oh yeah, that is it big time. I mean, that's just
Jay. I'm not keeping score, buddy, but I think with this, I may have taken the lead.
No,
on the
I don't think
question.
You're that. I think you think that two weeks in a row somehow brings you into the lead. We'll have to go.
Sure, it's three.
We'll have to go back. I still don't think you're leading though, as a result of that. But you're in a much better position now. That's for damn sure.
I am. It's competitive. Well, Rick, we thank you again for being with us, and we certainly appreciate hearing from you. And you know, a little depressed, but I'm happy about the Seinfeld question.
Bye-bye.
All right, Rick. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, and well, that is going to do it for this episode of.
Well, one more thing, Jay.
Yeah.
Before we wrap.
Yeah.
I do want to say a few special words.
Okay.
To a friend of the show, one Mr. Sonny Bunch, of the Washington Free Beacon and the Weekly Substandard podcast, who had some very nice things to say about our program. Sonny, they were much appreciated. Receiving praise from you, Sonny Bunch, feels like some sort of legendary accomplishment. And I am not exaggerating when I say that it warmed my heart to know that we are perhaps the Sucker Punch of podcasts.
Oh, man.
Well, that's good, right? Sucker Punch is a good movie.
That is good, but I don't know if Sonny Bunch would give us that much praise.
You're right. I may be overdoing it. You know how it is when I get compliments; they go right to my head. But
yes.
It was genuinely appreciated to Sonny Bunch and to Victorino Mattis and Jonathan Vlast at the Weekly Substandard. Thank you, gentlemen. Those guys run a fine show themselves. And you should definitely subscribe.
Yeah, and you could find them too on the Ricochet Network. So, you know, like you'd find The Fifth Estate on the Ricochet Network, so you can go there, and you can find them on iTunes as well. So, yeah, go ahead and give them a listen. It's a lot of fun. And so that is going to be a wrap on this episode of The Fifth Estate. So I am Jay Caruso for Mr. Neil Doing. Hey, we remind you, go back out there. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave us a rating. We love it. We love you. And we'll see you next time here on The Fifth Estate.